You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, you're watching the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all across the country. And I've got an amazing special edition today. One of the primary reasons you don't do big cases, we're going to share it with you today. So if you're struggling why you don't do those cases, we're going to show you why that's happening and how to get through it with my good friend, Dr. Andrew Turchin. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You don't want to miss this.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. And I am just going to say this, we are crazy grateful for all of you watching and all the feedback we're getting. It is tremendous. So thank you. And we're trying to bring you the stuff that you're requesting. And today is no exception. I have got one of the things you guys have been asking about, because if you're a dentist and you're on a path trying to do some great things, you're taking a lot of CE, sometimes you just get stuck and you realize, gosh, I want to go a little bit farther, but you're missing an ingredient. And today we're going to talk about the one ingredient or the primary reason you're not doing more big cases. Now, a couple show notes before I introduce my good friend here. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you're watching the broadcast, or even if you're watching it a little bit later, you're going to see the feed of questions. Please add your questions. We love the questions and we're getting a ton of awesome, great questions. I always say the question is the answer. So please type in the question and I'll have our expert Andrew today just he'll comment on it directly, or he'll comment on it a little bit later. And we love the questions so much that we're giving away a free Apple iWatch every Monday. So later today, we're going to be giving away an Apple iWatch and two free tickets to Activate, which is our practice growth seminar that you do not want to miss. That's almost sold out for June. So if you're thinking about going, please take a look at it and sign up now. And we just appreciate your questions. So let me tell you a little story. I'm going to say my intro for Dr. Andrew Turchin, and then I'm going to ask him to talk. He's one of those special, I want to call you a kid, but you're not really a kid. You look like a kid.
Not anymore.
And you have one of the wildest, if not the wildest transition I've ever been a part of in any part of this great profession of helping dentists achieve their goals. I flew out there and I was helping you. We were coaching you and you're like, I don't know if I want to practice in New York City, because you had a monster practice in New York City, amazing practice. And one day you just woke up and you said, no, I don't want to practice here anymore. Sold your practice and you moved to what we call heaven on earth. So this is my first live podcast where we're actually transmitting to somebody in heaven, back to the commoners back here and back on earth. But if somebody doesn't know who Dr. Andrew Turchin is, who is Dr. Andrew Turchin?
You know, I like you said, I was practicing in New York City, loved every minute of it. It wasn't that I got sick of New York. I just, I believe that you have to follow your passions in life. And I love to ski. I didn't want to go to the gym. I didn't want to do anything else, but I can ski every free moment I have. So, you know, here I decided one day. And if you think about, you know, listening to your inner self and doing those things that you're nervous to do, I actually listened to my 12-year-old self. Looking back after it all, why did I do the move? My bar mitzvah sign-in picture was me in a ski outfit. My whole theme was skiing. Every table had a different ski resort instead of a number. And the truth is, my 12-year-old self knew that I should live in a ski town. And it took me, you know, life's journey, 13 years of practice in New York City, loved it. And I needed to accomplish something. I needed to grow a large practice of a restorative practice in New York. And when I did, and I knew I could do it, I said, okay, let me do it somewhere else in some place that I think is the greatest place on earth. So, you know, we have an Aspen saying, living the dream, because anybody that lives here is living a dream.
Yeah. It's, so you're in downtown Aspen, Colorado. Is that right?
Yes.
You and I joke, people think, oh, it's so easy to practice there, but nobody really lives there, right? They just vacation there.
Oh, we've got about 6,000 full-time residents. So it is a little different and interesting, but with the dentistry we do, we get to see patients from all over the country and the world while they're in town. And some people make some special trips out to see us.
Yeah. So I have a special interest in watching your journey because I'm so proud of you. Because one day you just said, I'm just done. And I'm like, ooh, this is going to be a complex one. And you simplified it, pulled it off. And next thing you know, you created a crazy successful practice in a very short time frame. Now, I want to jump into this subject because as you and I have talked, this is really a huge piece of it. When dentists learn, you know, how to become a dentist, and they really start their CE journey after they graduate and they really get into it and they learn about themselves and their failures. They go on to great CE, amazing CE, but some of them don't do it. And you were telling me the story about there's some people that you know that have taken the world's best CE and sometimes they don't do any of it. Why is that?
You know, I think it comes down to one thing, confidence. That doing that first case, that second case, the third case, they're terrified. And in one way, they should be. It's pretty serious when you're preparing, you know, 10 or 20 teeth for veneers and getting the result you want. But having confidence, which comes from knowledge. So confidence, where does confidence come from? It comes from knowledge and it comes from experience. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, people gain knowledge, and then no experience. So they have trouble making that next step to actually doing the cases. So if they're not confident, their patients aren't confident. And the lab's not confident. The lab doesn't know them and can't trust that they won't try in a case and send it back 10 times because the patient doesn't like it. So having the confidence of a system that gets you to an end result the patient is absolutely ecstatic about is the most important thing in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as you're watching this, here's why you have to watch this. He's the only dentist in the United States that I know of that has a 100% money-back guarantee and 20% more. Now, we're going to get into that because I don't think that's the hugest, most important thing. But that's how important confidence is when you can communicate with the patient and you can say things like that or create a system like that. But let's break this down in the simple pieces first. You know, you mentioned that confidence comes from statistics, you know, or from the applied knowledge. Can you explain that? Like, what does that mean?
Well, you know, it's great to see a lecturer put up some beautiful before and afters and show the steps. But I think dentists don't know that their hands could do the same, or they have some doubt whether that all the cases look like that. Is that just a one or two or three? Right. We all have that doubt. I have that doubt. And sure, I speak a few times a year. I show my best cases for sure. But I'd also say that all my cases, since I know I'm going to guarantee that, I know that my cases are going to be amazing. Now, are they going to be what, let's say, somebody else loves? No, but they're what my patient loves, what I love. And I have a slightly unique taste. People that know me know that I love long teeth. Like, I love your teeth, Kirk. Your teeth are beautiful.
All right, right? Thanks.
But you know what? A lot of times, people would end up shortening those to 10 and a half millimeters. Your 12 is too long. And I could glance at those teeth and know they're 11 and a half to 12 millimeters because that's what nature creates. And so studying, where do we get that confidence from? I think studying natural, beautiful smiles is one of the keys. For over a decade, I waxed every case myself. That's, you know, that's one of those things you hear Scott Perkins tell you, you've got to do 100 root canals and molars in your hand on extracted teeth before you know what you're doing with endo. Or not, you know what you're doing, but until you get really confident that any tooth you open up, you'll be able to find the canals and be able to do a good root canal. Now, right. Of course, I don't even do root canal. So here I am talking about root canal. But realistically, that's what it comes down to, is having the confidence in doing things with your own hands. So whether that means you're bonding a ton at first, or you're waxing your own cases, you're trying on mock-ups in the patient's mouth, things like that to give you the confidence before you go ahead and prep 10 units, I think is important. It's not always quick and easy.
Right.
I hate to say it. I wish that were the case, but a little bit of work up front goes a long way to your confidence, because then you have experience. Even if it isn't 100 veneer cases, you've tried things in patients' mouths that are predictably beautiful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that you do really well, and I've seen this firsthand, is you're a big fan of systems and checklists, and you also keep data on the number of veneer cases that have failed and things like this. So you're not just pulling this out of thin air. When you're talking to a patient, you're very confident in the repetition of the checklists, and all that is crazy important. Can you just talk about that? Because the more predictable that your practice is, and a lot of this comes down because what you do is very complex. You have to make it simple through the checklist so that everybody else around you has confidence, and that comes across to the patient.
Yeah. Well, I'd say it was about 10 years ago, a weekend with you and John Cranham, where you guys turned me on to the checklist manifesto. I know it's been talked about other times on your show, but I think it's an amazing thing. Anything you want to do really, really well in life, I think deserves a checklist. It doesn't have to be super complex depending on the situation, but I think the first thing I did after that weekend was go home. On the plane ride home, I read that book. I checklisted the new patient exam process, our new patient process. And then the next thing I did was our big case checklist. And I've refined them over the years. I continue to refine them as I find there's something else I want during my exam process, or there's something else that my lab needs as information. You know, checklists are great because they give you a way to do it. And then when you find a better way, it's really easy to execute.
Right.
Just change the checklist. You need to have that culture, though, right? Of checklists in the office. It's hard. People don't like checklists.
Yeah. And sometimes people think, you know, great team members sometimes think, well, this is babysitting. No, it's not. It's called consistency. And the world's greatest surgeons do it. You know, they have to have a regular, repeatable, scalable consistency to everything that they do. And you've done that really, really well. Now, I'm going to take the position, let's say I'm a 32-year-old young dentist watching this going, Dr. Turchin, I totally understand, but you know, I've got checklists for something. What could you possibly put on a big cases checklist? Like, give us a little peek into just what's on there.
Well, you know, there's prepping the patient before I get in there. I don't walk in the room for a half an hour. I make sure that they've got the blanket they want. My assistants have a whole checklist on making them really comfortable, from lip balm to what movie they're going to watch. And for a large case, we'll choose two movies, make sure the headphones are on. You know, I just want to walk in and do what I do. And then there's the checklist of the clinical protocol. I mean, it's from how many people have done this? I mean, people have let patients go without an alginate, for instance. Somebody just spent a small fortune to have a new smile. Now they have to be inconvenienced with coming back. And I think I have to tell you, it's a little more complicated to do the dentistry I do because patients are flying in and out to see me quite often. Mm-hmm. I can't miss anything. I can't call them back. First of all, I don't think any patient should have to go through that because somebody didn't follow the checklist. So as simple as having the alginate, taking the bite before the temporaries are put on, I know every dentist that does big cases out there has at least once in their career put the provisionals on, cemented them, and didn't have the bite that they needed.
Right.
Now we've got to rip those off. I mean, with veneer temps, most of us are shrink wrapping and partially bonding them on, spot bonding. So they're not easy to take off. You really can't do that. So there's certain protocols and, you know, that you have to do before the next step. And if you don't, you kind of, you don't have that opportunity again. You know, even on a simple restorative case, a single unit, are you going to take the shade at the end? You have to take before you prep because the tooth is hydrated then. Mm-hmm. It's the wrong shade later. So my office knows, and that's where they learn, you know, my assistants, when they come in, they're first doing simple cases and my senior assistants are doing the bigger cases, but they learn. And I kind of on purpose don't say anything and let them learn the mistake. You know, people learn by mistakes.
Right.
So I let my team learn by mistakes once in a while and let them not take a shade before we start a procedure so that they could, we could do it later. It's not a big deal to learn once, but they don't forget it.
Right. And that's an important point you're bringing up too, because you've heard this cliche, to make a mistake is okay. You know, it's part of the journey, but to repeat the mistake, that's stupid. And really what happens is as you go down the path of getting better, and I've heard this from so many clinicians, people think doing the big cases, oh, that's just so much fun. Talk about the expectations. When somebody gives you a big check, they don't go, yeah, just get it close. You know, yeah. I love throwing money around at these things. That I think that's actually one of the things that's not talked about the most, is that the higher people pay for something, the higher their expectations are. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. And the key, I really do believe that you have to meet their expectations in every single way. Obviously, the clinical result has to be there at the end, but the experience along the way has to be comforting and relaxing. And that comes from your and your team's confidence as well. Their experience, I mean, people feel energy. It's a small space we're working in. You know, we're almost touching, but energy is palpable. So you and your assistants relaxation makes your patients relaxed. You know, the TV is great. The noise cancellation headphones is great. But if I was nervous or if my assistant was nervous, there's nothing else that could get over that. Everybody knows each other's energy, and that would change the entire thing. So absolutely. Another example of where confidence creates a good experience, but also the confidence of your steps that get you there every time predictably.
Mm-hmm. Right. I always say this, confidence is contagious, you know, and watching, you know, NCAA basketball, or if you watch a great, you watch Steph Curry or anybody walk onto the court, they don't think they're going to win. They know they're going to win a lot of times. Or, you know, baseball season is underway. You watch some of the best hitters, they get up there. They don't think, they're not praying for a hit. They're expecting a hit. And I think that's what happens a lot. Now, I want you to also speak to the lack of confidence, because a lot of dentists starting this journey, you know, you get into your own head sometimes and you think, oh, I can't do that, or the patient's not going to say yes. And you kill an opportunity yourself. Like you kill it before you even get a chance. Did that happen to you early in your career? Now, I will say this, your training ground was in New York, where people just tell you in your face. So that was right. That was a good training ground. But do you find that a lot of young dentists kill the opportunity before it even happens?
Yeah, I think that whole thing of, you know, measuring someone's pocketbook, it's really present options. That's it. I think it's, if you have a good process of how you present and you could give different options, like for instance, I tell every single patient that has issues with their, as Cranham would say, tooth position and size. So that means bite and aesthetics. I like to categorize things into that. There's bacterial stuff that we all treat, decay. And by the way, I'd like everyone to know, I do restorative dentistry every day. I might not do root canals. I might not do gum surgery. I might rarely do an extraction, but I do a class 2 composite probably every day in my practice, except the big case day. So what I do is I take care of the small town. So 3 days a week, I see general dentistry, and 1 day a week, sometimes 2 days a week, we do big case work. So I just want everyone to know that I'm coming from a place where we're seeing the same general population, and every single patient that has a tooth size, aesthetic, and bite issue, functional issue, we're going to give the same exact 3 options. And I think this is a good way to have the conversation without pressure. Right. Say, you know, I say this, you know, a lot of people have bite issues. You're not going to die from them. Right. We can fix them. We can maintain them. Or we could do nothing. So fixing them could be Invisalign orthodontics and veneers and crowns and all kinds of stuff, equilibrations. Maintaining it is as simple as a great night guard, an orthotic or night guard, an appliance to wear at night. Give them a perfect bite at night. Right. I mean, isn't 70-80% of the damage then at night anyway? And I'm going to be honest with every single patient, let them know that they can have 70-80% of the benefits of a perfect bite by wearing a piece of plastic at night. And then lastly, they could do nothing. And I promise they will not die from that. I mean, I could promise them they will die, but
right. Yeah. And I've watched you talk to a patient. You're not talking them into dentistry. I love how you do it. The patient, once the patients decide, it's their case instead of having it be your case. And that's a big transformation that any young dentist has to go through. So I want to go back to one thing, because it's really good that you said that, because having a practice that does big cases like you do on a regular basis, you're not doing them 4 days a week, you know, and people don't say that. It's really 1 day a week that you're doing big cases. And then 3 days a week, you know, you're just kind of, you know, Cranham used to call them aerobic days, or, you know, things like that, where you're just kind of getting everything done. Is that true in your practice, how that works?
Absolutely. I was just on a panel recently of low volume versus high panel, and they said, show us your schedule. And they wanted to see one of these like one or two patient a day schedules. But I showed them a Monday, which is a big case day. And I said, you guys should see that I see 13 to 16 patients on any other day. In a day, in being in a resort town, we see a ton of emergencies, by the way. And that, I have to tell you, you know, I know you like to understand people's journeys and where they come from. That was eye-opening for me to see two emergencies a day, which I used to see, you know, two a month, maybe in New York City. Nobody found me on the 15th floor of my practice too often, right? Of that building. Yeah. It wasn't the yellow pages, couldn't be found really. Right. So I didn't see emergencies, and there's just so many dentists in New York City. Here, I'm one of six dentists. And so I see probably more than one sixth of the emergencies in town, because they tend to be cosmetic. There's a ton of broken veneers, chipped veneers, debonded veneers that I see. And I'd say at least half my emergencies are that. And what that did for me is make me see a lot of dentistry that I didn't see before. I saw a lot of dentistry that, you know, I have to admit, disappointed me a little bit. And right. I think if we're going to do dentistry, complex dentistry, expensive dentistry, that we really have to do it at a very high level. Or we shouldn't do it. It's not a filling. There's more at risk here for the patients.
Right, right. And that's interesting with the dynamic. Two things about the emergency thing. You've taken the emergencies and transformed it in your brain that they're opportunities now, instead of complaining. You know, because each one of those broken veneers or broken teeth, that's an opportunity for a bigger conversation, right?
Absolutely. And we had a lot of those. And the one conversation that changed my thinking on one of my goals in life is a woman in her mid-30s came in with a bike accident, knocked out a temporary veneer. Nobody's fault. She had an accident. And what I remember really distinctly from that conversation was saying, this nice temporary veneers or provisional veneers, but, you know, patients understand temporary. So we put it back on. I said, oh, very nice. I hope you like them. And she said, well, I don't like them. The permanents are going to be much shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how much shorter?
Okay.
And she's like, I don't know. They're going to be perfect though.
Yeah.
And it just against my belief of this prep and pray, and we're going to put in some porcelain that hasn't been tested. I always say to people, a plastic surgeon would do anything to try in a nose.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
We need to take that opportunity. We have that opportunity. We get to try on a, you know, whatever you want to call it. I call it a trial smile. My provisionals aren't provisionals. I call it a trial smile on purpose so that the patients know that we're trying something. Their job is to come back and give me feedback. So we do this whole process I call the dual blueprint method. And it's not prep and pray. It's the absolute opposite. It is, we are going to give you almost exactly the end result and you get to live with it. And not until a patient tells me they love it are we going to move forward.
Yeah.
And I honestly thought that's how everyone did it.
Yeah. Now take us in that, because I love this. You got the trial smile and the dual blueprint method, because people aren't coming to your office and then they spend an hour with you and then they sign up for a big case. You're nurturing these relationships. So what is the trial smile? And like, go into the details if you can. And then also the dual blueprint method, because this helps you with the confidence factor that you don't start it until we're all on the same page. Correct?
Absolutely. I think it's key knowing that no matter what I try, a lot of cosmetic dentistry is done. We're going to make them a hair longer and we're going to make them whiter. And I want to put teeth where they really belong. So first of all, knowing where teeth belong in the face is I think one of the keys to confidence, knowing. So think about trying to make any journey. You want to know exactly where you're going. You don't want to know kind of what state you're going to. You want to know the exact address. And if you do, you're going to get there a lot more confidently. Well, I have a very strong opinion of an ideal model of aesthetic and functional ideal. And I try to get my patients as close as I can. We don't get them exactly. A lot of patients, there's compromise to be made for sure, for whether it be time, not doing orthodontics, or price. I mean, if price was no object, maybe we could do more ideal. But oftentimes, we have to know where that is so right. We get people as close as possible. So our process starts with that, knowing that. So when a patient comes in and they do want to discuss fixing, the first option is fixing their teeth. We talk about where the wear is, why it might be happening because of tooth position and functional issues, and how teeth interact with the muscles and the joint. But once we figure that out, we'll either, if patient says, yeah, let's go forward, then our first appointment, which traditionally in dentistry is called prep, temp, and impress, we call it the trial smile. Because I like to talk to patients about what their benefits are going to be and what they're getting out of it. They're going to get a trial smile at the end of that. That's all that matters.
That's awesome.
We're not going to sit there and focus on the drilling and the impressions. And, you know, if they ask what that is, we'll talk about it. But the main takeaway for them, and everybody should know their takeaway, why are they coming in? Because they're going to get a trial smile. They're going to get something to try, come back in and give me feedback. And then we're going to have a post-op. But do you think I call it a post-op?
No, you call it a pre-op or something. I don't know. What do you call it?
I call it I love my smile appointment.
Okay. I like that.
Because that's what has to happen by the end of that appointment. Mm-hmm. If they don't absolutely love their smile, I'm not making porcelain. I'm not gonna bring it down to Federico, our ceramist, and have them start building, because he wouldn't have the confidence to know what to build either. And that's the thing. Everybody on the team has to have confidence that they're in the right place to do their job right. And without a patient saying they love their trial smile, then we're really going to waste our ceramist's time. And I don't like wasting his time.
Right. You know, it's so cool that you do that, because a lot of the confidence is established visually. And some dentists watching this know you have that one case that sticks in your mind that you seeded all of this dentistry and you sat the patient up and you could tell they were horrified.
Yeah.
And, you know, you almost had a heart attack at the same time. And there's one of two ways that goes. You say, okay, I am never getting in this position again, or I'm never doing this again. And you went the first route. Say, look, I'm going to make sure before I do porcelain, you know, because the shade, shape, translucency, you know, some people think square, some people think round. We're not guessing here. We're all on the same page, from the ceramist to you, to your assistants, to your patients. And that's a collective confidence.
Absolutely. And, you know, you hit upon something, translucency and shade. Too often, you know, we give them these monochromatic, I mean, temporaries usually are one shade, and we give them these monochromatic restorations, and we want them to evaluate length and shape and, you know, squareness and roundness, all of that. And function and phonetics, you know, all of those details. And we don't go so far as to give them a realistic shading. So it's kind of disconcerting for them, because you're asking them to evaluate it, and they know they have chiclets in their mouth.
Right.
And that's fine for those patients that are looking for chiclets. But for those that are looking for a more natural texture and translucency, then I think it behooves us to put that last detail in. It takes me less than 10 minutes to put a natural translucency and texture into our temporary or trial smile, so that a patient could truly evaluate something that has the depth and variation in shade of the permanence.
Yeah. And now with technology in dentistry, it's amazing how much easier that you can do that now than ever. So fantastic. Now, talk about the guarantee, because again, this is one of the most unique things. And please, if you're watching this, don't get stuck on the guarantee. The guarantee is just one part of the whole process, right? It's not the thing that makes or breaks your entire new patient experience.
Yeah, it's less than a year old, and I've been doing this a while. So it's something that I don't even remember where the idea came up from. I was talking to a few other dentists, and I said, you know, I think I could guarantee this. I've never had to cut off my own veneer in my entire career. So I've been using a protocol similar to the dual blueprint method the entire time. So I think I give that credit. So I think sometimes patients should know how much confidence we have. And that's me saying I'm 100% confident that you will absolutely love your smile. So I call it the I love your smile guarantee. And they have to love it. If they don't love it, I will either refine it, redo it, or if they'd like, if they've lost confidence in me, because it's all about confidence, they could have it done elsewhere for up to 20% more than my fee. My fees, you know, it's not low, but it surely isn't the highest around. So if they need to go to someone that charge a little bit more, that's not an issue at all.
Have you ever had to exercise the guarantee?
Never.
Okay. Yeah. And then also too, I have so many questions with the guarantee. Are there any contingencies on the guarantee? Because I'm just going to ask the questions that people might have. Do they have to be a patient in hygiene for so long? I mean, what, there's always a contingency, or, you know, there's some sub rules here. It's the fine print. Do you have fine print on this at all?
That they don't love their smile.
That's it.
They have to love it. This isn't, you know, a lot of guarantees. And I think some people have tried some guarantees in dentistry, and it's like, you know, the 10-year guarantee. I guess we didn't even bother with that, because I get more patients worried about whether they're going to love it than whether how long it's going to last. Now, I'm not suggesting that lasting long isn't a problem, and we could add that, but that was kind of the hurdle that I wanted to make sure that patients didn't have to worry about. You know, we stand behind our work. If veneers were breaking, we would fix them. But we actually don't have that problem. Right. You know, you mentioned statistics before. I measured our statistics not long ago, and I looked back and found that we had a 99.6% success rate at 10 years on our veneers. So, you know, that means no chipping, no bonding, things like that. So I'm not worried about that at all. So if they wanted that on the guarantee, no problem. It's a 10-year guarantee. Not. I think our dentistry should last a lot more than 10 years.
Right. Absolutely. So having a number that high, just by paying attention to it, it's kind of like an NBA, you know, superstar getting to the line, knowing, hey, look, 89% of these go in the hoop, you know, and it just lends itself to a great process as you do that. Now, as far as the other details that happen in your practice that create confidence, these are important. We talked about this before we got started. There's a difference between confidence and ego, because you see dentists that go way over on the ego side of things. Can we just talk about that for a second? Because we do see that a lot.
Yeah, I guess we do. I classify ego as like a false confidence almost, and almost a delicateness of their ego and their personality. So, you know, those people, if you ask me, anybody with a large ego is going to be less likely to take photographs and look at their work before and after critically and learn from their mistakes. I think ego gets in the way of real success, measurable success, because people with ego are tend to be worried about their feelings. They have the very delicate feelings. And, you know, I know that's a generalization, but ego is a thing that gets in our way so much. Right. Ego not to, let's say, go to another lecture. I go to lectures constantly because I want to hear everybody's ideas. And if I could find one tidbit from every time I go to a CE course, then that's great. I think large egos say, no, I'm up there speaking. I'm not going to be in the audience on the other end. So every dental conference I speak at, I spend every single moment taking notes as I see you every single time you're seeing someone speak. There's a lot to learn from people. So ego gets in the way of learning, of getting better. Ego gets you stuck.
It does. It doesn't add any relationship currency in any fact. And, you know, you see this. And this is a generalization too, but most dentists, when they're talking about themselves a lot, they're just thinking, oh my gosh, when they're more interested in you and what's happening and how do you do that? I'm so fascinated. Those are the healthiest people usually in any environment. Now,
absolutely,
you actually even created a coaching program. Now, I'm not going to talk about that just yet, but when you coach young dentists on how to do this, what are some of the things that you see when they come in and you start coaching them? Like, what are some of the pitfalls or the barriers that you have to get over in the first couple of months?
It varies tremendously, but I would say that there are some dentists, there are a lot of dentists actually, that don't truly know tooth form, natural tooth form. They rely too much on their laboratory to do the wax ups. And I'm not suggesting you can't do that. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know it yourself, you don't know how to adjust it. So that I love your smile appointment, that post-op appointment. If a patient needs an adjustment and you can't adjust it to their liking, I think you don't have the ability. So we all should know as dentists, and even I find a lot of labs aren't using natural tooth form anymore. When you're not looking at smiles all day long, real natural ones, and you're not studying every detail about them and learning and being curious about that line angle and that depression and that texture, it sounds geeky, but if you're not focusing on that and you're just focusing on a white piece of porcelain, then you've totally lost, you know, the standard, the center point, which is nature. So that's one thing. So I have a whole series of natural smiles that are great to train them with, but also, I just have them looking at people. I mean, we should be staring at smiles all day long. We should be looking at our, while we're speaking to people. I know about 70%, 70-80% of our eye contact while speaking is at the mouth. For a layperson, a dentist should be about 90%, 100%. We should really be studying how much tooth are they displaying. Is it aging them because they're not showing enough while speaking? How about that smile, you know, when they crack a joke? So if we're not, I don't want to say obsessed, but I'm that geek. I stop people on the street and take pictures of their smiles. I've been known to do that. It's embarrassing for anybody I'm with, I assure you, that people don't like it. But if I see something special that we need to learn from, then I'll snap a photo real quick.
Yeah. And it's okay. What you're saying is it's okay to be a geek, right? On all this.
Yeah. You have to be.
Now, you're such a geek that you actually created a grading system, didn't you? That to find out how good your confidence is. Is it a 20-point checklist? What is it? So when you're talking to a young dentist, that they grade themselves on a questionnaire to find out where their confidence level is with the case.
So there's 8 categories from designing smiles to understanding tooth form that we just talked about and where their confidence is in all these different categories. Preparing the case, for instance, all you know, the technical aspects. So it's in 8 categories where they rate themselves in, you know, from I know nothing about that and zero confidence to I feel really confident in that. And the goal, the reason I made it, it was because it's a fast way to get the information I need to know where I could help somebody or whether it's another place that they need help first or instead of. There are people that have a lot of it ready to go and they just need a couple of little things. And I like to point people in the right direction. I just want people to get better. And that's what happened from that story of the woman who came in and she didn't like her temporaries. It taught me that one of my goals is to make sure that there's more education out there and people are getting it from the right sources and they're not prepping and praying and they're doing it in the right manner so that they could be confident, their patients be confident. And most importantly, I think if we have a lot of great smiles in this world, I think we make the world a better place. I think great smiles are just so helpful for the world to just, I mean, if everybody just walked around smiling, if they were confident enough to smile, if our patients were confident enough to smile, I don't know, maybe we'd save the world.
Well, and you know, we say that, and there's so much truth to it, is that when you change somebody's smile, you change their entire life. Christian Coachman made me watch the YouTube video called The Power of a Smile, and that's 20 minutes, and this guy is not even in the dental field. He talks about how it changes the world. So the ability to smile, and a lot of people, if you really listen to patients, they don't smile for a lot of emotional and behavioral reasons, and that's really a big part of doing what you do, is you have the behavioral component where you're it's not about how great you are technically. You're helping these people become better human beings. The other thing I want to say about dentistry, and I could talk about this forever, is the fact is this is the greatest profession ever. It is. And it was the top rated profession in the United States again on January 11th this year. We have the ability to change people's lives. There are people that fix teeth and there are people that change lives. It's not the same business. And it's not that one is bad or good. You just have to choose which side. And the cool part is people are going to be living longer, longer and longer. 1 in 3 babies that's born today will actually live to be 100. So dentists have a lot of work to do. Like this isn't a short-term profession. The industry's not going to shift and dentistry's going to dry up. People are going to have to eat and they're going to have to live. And so being positioned in this fashion, you can choose how to practice. Now, I want to go back to one thing. You used the phrase, live your dream. How important is that as a young dentist or as a mature dentist to pick how you want to practice? Because you don't have 72 ops in your Aspen practice location. You, when you left New York City, you're like, no, I know exactly how I want to practice and I'm going to live my dream. And so can you talk about that?
Sure. I think it's one of the greatest things we could do for ourselves, our families, and the world is practicing and living the way you like. And that sounds selfish to live the way you want or practice the way you want, but I disagree. You know, I'm a big fan of a book called The Big Leap, and they talk about the zone of genius in there. I don't know if you gave me the book. I don't know where I got it from.
The fish jumping out, right?
Exactly. And the thing about when you're working in your zone of genius, the area that, and people wonder, what's a zone of genius? Zone of genius is really easy to figure out. It's something, it's your part of your life that you love doing so much that it doesn't drain energy. It actually adds energy to your life. So if we could all categorize real quickly, you know, write down all the things we have to do in life. And sure, it doesn't mean you don't do any of the things you don't love to do. But if we could categorize the things and say, here's the things I love to do that give me energy, that boost me and I feel better about. Here's the things that I do well, but and don't take any energy away from me, but they don't actually add any energy. And then the ones that are draining. And we all know we all have to do those. We all do them.
Right.
Can you imagine what a better place in the world everybody would be and what a better world we'd have if people spent more time working in their zone of genius, which means they're given energy. They have more energy. They're doing what they do best. And that means if they're doing what they do best, they're giving more to the world, whatever that is. Whether that be a masseuse is in their zone of genius, that special masseuse that it's what they do great, they're adding physical health and well-being to people. And do we really want people spending all their time being drained of energy and doing things that they hate to do and aren't good at?
Right. You don't want them, you know, and I think what you're talking about is just a journey of self-awareness, because when you're young, you do everything. And then you get older and you go, I don't do endo well. I like ortho, endo's a great one. Some of them go, no. Endo's really good for my practice. I'm like, no, it's not good for your brain. Cause I don't care how much money you're making. You hate every minute of it because you've got an endodontist right around the corner. It does a better job of that. And my coach said it best. He uses the word unique ability, Dan Sullivan. He says, when you find your unique ability, it's not 10 things. It's usually 3 or 2. Spend all of your time there. It's the multiplying effect. And he used Frank Sinatra. He said, Frank Sinatra never moved a piano, set up a microphone. He worked on his craft all the time. And when you're spending your time doing what you do, it lends itself to more confidence and people can feel it. Now, I want to say one more thing about confidence, because what you're talking about, Andrew, this is so critical. Our whole team is going through an awesome sales training, and this guy is so good. He says, two people given the same knowledge and given there's rapport, that's key, the better influencer wins 100% of the time. It's just the better influencer, the person who believes. Like somebody can come up to you and go, I'll tell you exactly where that restaurant is. I know where exactly. And they could give you the wrong advice and you're going to go, okay. You know what I mean? And you don't want to do that. That's not what I'm saying. But the fact is that if you become a better influencer, more confidence, you can help people achieve their goals, because some dentists might be watching this going, oh, you're just talking people into, you know, more cosmetic dentistry. And that's not the case. You know, you can help them. You see it, but you don't go there because of all the stuff that goes in. You're like, she's not going to say yes. I don't want to do that. But if you look at it and say, it's my job or my responsibility to help this person see the possibilities, I'm going to let them choose, but I'm going to help them. That's where the game changes.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, going back to how we open the door without insulting someone, because I early in my career, I learned the idea that, you know, if a plastic surgeon is seeing a patient and the person comes in for, let's say, a breast augmentation, and the plastic surgeon says, can I fix your ugly nose while you're here? We have to be careful not to cross that line either.
Right.
So it's more about opening a door to have that conversation. That's why it's, you know, we could fix it, we could maintain it, or we could do nothing and see if they open that door. And there's a few other tricks to opening that door for sure. We want to have the conversation, but we don't want to have it with someone that doesn't want to have it.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other, you know, because you've had an incredible journey, any other advice you'd give a young dentist watching this that might be struggling, let's say, in an insurance environment or just, you know, bought a practice and kind of accumulated all of the behaviors? What would you tell the young dentist that's watching this?
I would say, listen to their 13-year-old self. Do what they want to do, live where they want to. And yeah, if some people don't have much of an opinion, so fine, move to where the best dentist to population ratio is or whatever. I moved to the worst twice. Okay.
And but you
yeah, exactly. And you could do that. And you could practice the type of dentistry you want. And speaking of, you know, doing the root canals and doing a lot of procedures, there's this kind of idea right now that's quite popular, is to be a super dentist. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that if that suits your personality. But I would go back to that zone of genius idea or the unique ability. I love Dan Sullivan as well, by the way. And you have to look at it and say, am I really good at this? Am I using my time best? And if not, it'll be filled by another procedure. And you have to really, really believe that. So recently I was on a panel of high volume versus low volume dentistry. And what I found really interesting is that myself and Josh Wyatt down in Florida, you know, big volume. He's hoping to start practice already in a few years. He's, you know, he's one of these young bucks that's killing it, and he's a great guy. And I always look for commonalities. And I think that's an interesting thing as one of my life philosophies, to look at commonalities. Now, if I go and we're on a panel of us versus them, if you want to look at the high volume versus low volume, and we find a commonality there between our two practice styles, you better listen. You better maybe step back and say, maybe there's something to it. It's kind of like if you listen, if you hear Dan Sullivan say something that sounds just like the book in Big Leap, you say, wow, a lot of people are describing the same phenomena multiple ways. You know, you can see that in religion, right? Religions say some of the same things. And maybe there's something to it if all the smartest people in the world are saying the same thing in their own words. Right. So, and it's not always that they stole each other's ideas. I don't think that's the case. I think that smart people come up with the same conclusions. So the conclusion that we came out of the high volume versus low volume that we found is this amazing commonality is that we both did very limited amount of procedures.
Really? Wait, go into that. Explain that.
Yeah. Very limited amount of procedures. So Josh does, none of us do dentures. We don't do endo. He basically is a restorative guy. He does fillings and some crowns and some bridges. Doesn't place implants, has no desire to do that whatsoever. Myself as well. I do fillings and porcelain. That's what I do. We have a hygiene department, obviously, that takes care of that. Right. And that's all I do. That's all I'm going. Oh, and by the way, we do some plastic. We do some night guards. But I don't do dentures. I don't place my own implants. We have a wonderful periodontist. So that would be something I say we could learn from two different practice models, that successful people in two models limit their scope. Doesn't mean it can't be done the other way.
Right.
It just means it can be done this way, which is let's limit our scope to a few things that we could do really well. Let's kill it. Let's do it not only well, but efficiently. I like to do it because I do it well. Wyatt likes to do it because he could do the fastest filling or crown in the world because that's all he does, you know? And if he was throwing root canals in there, it would slow him down and on the crown probably because he wouldn't be so focused on doing one thing really efficiently.
Yeah, that's so powerful you said that. You know, look for the commonalities, because if there's one thing I don't like about dentistry, it's the divisiveness. You know, people throw out the baby with the bathwater. As soon as you say one phrase, they're like, they cut off everything else you say. And there's so much to be learned from everybody. And I think the more you can take that posture, the world would be a better place. You know, people kill each other over religious beliefs. You know, why don't we find the commonality here and make it all better? Awesome. Any other last piece of advice before we wrap this up? I love this, Andrew, because this is so key. Mm-hmm. And I do want you to speak to this. Confidence, you don't get there and stay there. Confidence can be very dynamic at times, don't you think?
Sure, absolutely. Everybody loses a bit of confidence for a little bit. I think the trick is to figure out a way to get it back. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, do I ever have a patient that comes back at the I Love Your Smile appointment and tells me they hate their child smile? Absolutely. Does it ding me and hurt me a little bit? Sure. You know, we were talking egos before. Everybody has some ego.
Right.
But the trick is, do we take it personally or do we figure out a way to fix it for that patient? Mm-hmm. So I think usually they're minor adjustments, and patients see a half a millimeter as, you know, giant teeth. And these are things we can fix. We can adjust. So take it all with stride. Realize that your job is to figure out a way to make that patient happy. It's so easy to point the finger and say, oh, that's a difficult patient. I really don't believe in that. I'm like, do I have a hard time with some patients? Yes. Mm-hmm. But I always look, what can I do better for them? How can I either communicate better? Huge communication. By the way, so you keep on asking me for more advice. I'd say the most important thing we can do for our patients is learn to listen and then communicate effectively. But learning to listen is most of it. So, I've been on a journey, you know, ever since Brian DeRoche and back then, and just learning to communicate. We have this wonderful course in our little community. Our community has magical little things where somebody gifted a course to the whole community called Our Community Listens. Hmm. And it's a 2-day course on listening that I think there's some pods around the country, but they really, it's almost like 30% of our community is taking it. The police department, the teachers, my entire team is taking it. And it was gifted by somebody that owns a large conglomerate that it helped their companies. And then since he's a part-timer here, he gifted it to the community. So we have these really interesting things. And whenever I could learn more about communication and people and personalities and that type of thing, so whether it be DISC or Colby or any of those things, I think it's really useful to, have, what do we call it, emotional IQ.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, in learning lessons, a lifelong study. My wife says I've got a lot of studying to do. So, and my team, you never, you know. So, a couple of things I want to say. You know, this is so. That's why I'm so proud of you. I mean, you've made one of the most radical transformations in all of dentistry, and you crushed it as soon as you made. Because I kept checking in with you, I'm like, dude, you're going to a place that has, there's nobody there. You know what I mean? And there are a lot of dentists there, and it's amazing to watch what you've done, but you're like, I don't see them as competition, and I'm going to do what I do. And your passion speaks so loudly. So if you're a young dentist watching this and you struggle with the one thing that's holding you back to do more cosmetic cases. Now, obviously you have to have what you said at the beginning. You got to have the knowledge, and then you got to have the experience. Take the assessment. So Andrew was kind enough. We actually put a link on this. It's fantastic. Take the assessment and just kind of see where you're at. And then you agreed. I don't know if you willingly agreed or did you, that you'll talk to anybody for 20 minutes. Like, you're a busy guy, but I really appreciate the fact that you'll talk to somebody and just kind of see where they're at and just tell them what you see in the assessment, get to know them. And you're willing to do that still?
Yeah, happy to point them in the right direction. I want us to be better at this. And I know there's some amazing courses out there and everybody learns differently, right? Some people need online because that's where they learn best and travel's a problem and things like that. Some people like to be in a big lecture and likes the camaraderie of that big 300 person lecture hall and what happens afterwards and things like that. And then some people really need like their handheld to get it done. And everybody's different. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of great education out there. So I just want to help point to a few great things that I've learned from. And, you know, and I think we'll all be better off as a profession if we just keep learning.
Absolutely. And Andrew, you're such a great guy. And you said this, I don't need any more clients, but you only take a handful and just work with them intimately, which I really, really appreciate. And you check out his website too, andrewturchin.com. And I'm going to have you back on a bunch of other things because you are so well-versed. You're at Practice on Fire, you know, the Dental Maverick. You're doing a lot of these. Every time I open up one of these, there you are right in the front row learning. And that's what I love about you, buddy. So thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it. So stick around for just a second because I want to chat with you. But if you're watching this, again, if you have questions for Dr. Turchin, please type them in the feed because he's great about this. He'll get back to you and answer these questions. And if you want other suggestions from what Dr. Turchin's talking about, another topic, I've got a couple that I want to cover. Please type those in the feed and I'll be sure to make them happen. And so until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. Have a great day. Thank you so much.